Okay, let's get into the CSM thing. Star Conqueror, how much time do you have?
Oh, I got all the time in the world.
All right. So this is Allie's segment. We can let Allie decide in which order she wants to tackle this, but there's been quite a lot going on in the Eve development and CSM front, including new controversial anchorable things, some changes to very frequently used modules and weapon systems, and a very discussion slash thought-provoking post from the Vice Chair, Rippard Tegg. So take it away, Allie.
I'm going to start with the easy stuff, which is the there's been a couple of changes that Fozzie has posted for balance in 1.1. Those changes are there's an interceptor nerf, a very, very slight nerf to their agility. What that does is it makes it a lot harder to have an interceptor with less than 2 second align time. This is important because 2 second align time is kind of the cutoff between where someone will realistically be able to point you and where they won't. In order to activate a module on someone, what has to happen is you have to start a lock, your client on a tick, so on a 1 second little interval, has to get back that you've completed that lock, and then once your client receives the signal that it's completed the lock, it will request a module activation. So what that means is, even if you have a reasonably fast lock time, you're gonna have a lot of trouble catching an interceptor that's moving at faster than 2 second align time. So the agility was nerfed. This will make interceptors a little bit easier to catch. They're quite speedy, and quite slippery post Rubicon, and so this is probably a good change. Change that was just sort of an oddity that got fixed. Drones now regenerate shields at different rates. It used to be that fighter bombers and fighters would regen shields actually kind of surprisingly fast. The Mantis had a max shield regen of 62 HP per second, which would tank 92 Omni DPS, so it could just tank a frigate without anything happening on it. Now it's got a max regen of 20 HP per second because it got nerfed. So fighter bombers, fighters, and sentries are they die easier. Light and medium drones are a little bit more durable and they'll regen shields a little bit faster, but it's still not like they can really tank. The actual big meaty part of this is a lot more modules can now be overheated. And this is something that CCP Fozzie mentioned at EVE Vegas and the CSM talked about and were interested in the balance for. You can now overheat tracking computers, sensor boosters, remote tracking computers, remote sensor boosters, remote ECCM, tracking disruptors, damps, target painters, ECM bursts, smart bombs, target spectrum breakers, interdiction sphere launchers, and omnidirectional tracking links. That's right, omnidirectional tracking links are now an active module. A little bit more on that here.
Active and scripted.
Yeah, so omnidirectional tracking links now work the way that tracking computers do,
Well,
with the
they will.
same kind of bonuses. Basically, what had been happening, omnidirectional links gave you like 25% boost to drone range and drone tracking, and they were a completely passive mod all at the same time. This was, quote, a little OP. It meant sentry drones track and project damage extremely well. So even leaving us out any drone assist concerns, there's a little bit of a balance issue with the weapon system itself, and that balance issue is partly because of the omnis. Because they're so good, they give so many bonuses, you're gonna fit them on every single drone ship you have, and they give a lot of benefit to the ship. So they've been nerfed. They give less damage projection in terms of distance and less tracking by default. You can script them to increase the tracking or increase the range. They now boost both optimal and fall-off range, so bouncers have anything going for them. So that's, I mean, that's, I think, the best thing here. Overheating things like remote ECCM and local ECCM means that you can possibly break a jam when you're in a logi and you really, really, really need to be able to target someone in order to save your fleet. So it's a little bit of an EWAR nerf in that respect. The default strength of all of these modules has in a lot of cases, the default strength of these modules has been decreased in a lot of cases. Target painters, tracking disruptors, and damps are all less effective by default in exchange for more effectiveness when overheated. So basically that's just now a thing that you have to manage and pay attention to. In addition, because tracking computers are going to be pretty good, or have the potential to be pretty good after this change, capital turrets have been nerfed, with tracking down about 5% versus current TQ values when not overheating any tracking computers. So if you overheat two T2 tracking computers, you'll get about 1.5% better tracking than you'd get today just running them. If you overheat just one, it's a little bit less than you get today. And if you overheat none, you're just not tracking as well as you used to. And this is basically to balance out the potential effect that overheating would give in terms of Blop Dreads just being incredibly powerful. As people have pointed out, obviously, if you desperately need to blop someone, you can overheat your tracking computers, keep spares in the hold, and just swap them out whenever they burn out. I'm actually interested, Turtle and Star, what you guys think of this.
Sorry, I had to step away for about near the last bit of that.
What do you think of the tracking nerf on Dreads, but them actually getting a little bit more tracking if they can swap their stuff out with a carrier nearby?
Dreads won't affect them, to be perfectly honest. A good Dread pilot knows what they're doing. Dreads can't hit anything without webs or paints. That 5% won't really affect them, regardless of how they're fit, to be fair. If a Vindicator is pointing something and, you know, it's getting target painted, or a Loki, for example, it's gonna die. It's that simple.
OTLs, it's, like, not even really that big of an issue either, to be honest. Because, yeah, overall, it's getting a little bit of a nerf in numbers, but typically, when you have a ship that's running an OTL, you're running them like at least two, maybe more. So you're going to be able to script one for each and get that increased bonus for each, section of the buffs, however they split it up, something like that. But
yeah,
it's not going to be an issue. It's going to hurt the people that just throw one on to fill like their last low slot on a drone ship or something. But most dedicated drone ships have two or more, so it's not like you ever really have to make a choice as to what you're scripting for.
Even with two omnidirectionals, even if you script them, will do less than they do today. Instead of getting plus 50% to both optimal and tracking, you'll get, I think, plus 30% to tracking and plus, I forget, like 15 optimal, 30 fall off, or something else.
It sounds like usual, but yeah, so you're taking a numbers hit, but everybody's taking that numbers hit.
Yeah.
So now it's about making the best with what you're going to have. And when you have two or more, you can make the best of it.
I think the biggest problem with Cinch is the fact that you can assign huge amounts of these things to some person in a fleet. Really, it is really the issue. It doesn't scale well.
Or it scales too well, I guess.
That's what I mean by that, really. You know, like, take the Ishtar, for example, and Centric Airs are even worse, but you have almost Talos DPS with sniper ranges with fucking small gun tracking, depending on how they're fit.
Yeah.
But at the same time, you got to keep in mind that any drone-based weapon system has severe disadvantages compared to regular weapons, and they do need to have upsides to compensate for that. You can't just stack them against missiles or drones. on an even playing field without acknowledging that sentry drones are fixed, and if you want to pick them back up, you have to actually go back to them. They can be destroyed.
Yeah, but have you seen how many flights you can stick in an Ishtar? If you take one of the mobile depots, you can get an extra 3, so you have 6 flights of sentries you can carry in a single Ishtar.
Well, the mobile depot has changed that math somewhat. It used to just be 3, but...
After, you're right that sentries do need their own sort of advantage. I think that they still have that, even with this nerf. This nerf is reducing their projection and damage application some, but it's not, you know, bringing them back down to the rate of guns.
No.
Yeah. The sentry stats themselves are quite powerful, especially in the tracking area.
My complaint was more towards, like, the fact that someone, I'm going to use sentry carriers again, and both sides are guilty of this, can assign drones and then leave their computer for literal hours. You know, when DRB would do that, camping Black Legion in the station, goons would constantly say, oh, I just left, and DRB would get me all these kill mills. Or N3, you know, going AFK in these, like, 9-hour fights. You know, the fact that someone can be away from the computer and still be effective damage dealer is kind of silly.
Well, that's tie-dye for you. I mean, if you had the same situation without tie-dye, those people would be lasting, you know, minutes before they died.
And that's the crux of it, the heart of it. Like, okay, you're nerfing sentry drones, but you're doing it in a way that doesn't really address the glaringly, overwhelmingly bad problem about them that people think is an issue. Why are you hitting omnidirectionals, which by the way, don't just affect sentry drones, instead of hitting the actual drone assist issue itself?
Because omnidirectionals are also, I think, if you hit the drone assist issue itself, it would not remove the need to nerf omnidirectionals. I think both changes are necessary. Drone assist on sentry drones in particular should be removed. Drone assist on, you know, on other drones, we can talk about it. There's some actual interesting uses there. But even if you removed it, you would still have the ability for Ishtars to blab interceptors from many, many ranges. And you'd still have drone ships projecting and applying damage much better than their equivalent turret ships in an area where the disadvantages of drone ships don't apply as severely. And so for that reason, I think a small nerf, and the Omnis are a great place to look at it, especially given that they're obviously better than the module that they compare to, is a good call. This is also, it's not like because CCP did this, they won't nerf drone assist, or because CCP did this, the CSM thinks that drones are all fine now. It's just one change that fit in well with the overheating stuff. It's one change that needed to happen.
One of the other concepts at work there in the whole doesn't need to be nerfed discussion is when you have sentry drones on especially a bonus ship for drones, and you've assigned them over to assist somebody else in fleet that has a ship with a much faster lock speed. Going back to Alex's point about, you know, the pros and cons of one weapon system over another, you know, a Dominix, for example, they don't need to worry about scan resolution because, well, the drones are assigned to someone that has a very fast scan resolution. Same way with, you know, carriers and such like that might take an incredibly long amount of time to nerf, target, you know, whatever, let's say it's hacks. They're going to be able to... The DPS is going to be downrange much more rapidly because they're all assigned to a ship with a much higher scan res. In fact, probably several that will be set up to take advantage of that. So if you think about the same exact mechanic applying to any turret or launcher-based weapon system, there is none, right? You can't assign your weapons to somebody else that has a faster lock speed. All I can get at best is remote SIBO, but that still needs to be done to everybody in the fleet. So there's a pretty... pretty powerful force multiplier of having heavier ships with drone bonuses or tech tier resist profiles, like a Ishtar, for example. You know, with that kind of DPS going down range with the scan resolution speeds we're talking about.
But again, that's a drone assist issue, not a sentry drone or a sentry drone module issue.
Yes.
And I think, to Ali's point about, well, it doesn't mean that they're never going to tackle drone assist. Yeah, okay, but it's the much more glaring problem, and they announced this first. Which...
this is easier.
Well, and it's not like it came by itself either. There's like over a dozen modules that are getting this treatment, and OTLs just happen to kind of fall into the spectrum of the stuff they're looking at. The low slot, medium slot, you know, weapons modifiers, ECM modifiers, shit like that. So it...
okay, that's fair.
That's the way I see it anyways. It doesn't really seem all that, like, even connected to drone assist and that issue there. Just happenstance.
Yeah, it affects the same system, but it's not the same class of problem.
Alright, fair enough. Let's move on to the deployable structures, because this is another big controversial thing. Probably, yeah, I think, even more controversial.
Like we said, this is a bit of a crunchy CSM segment. So there's been some new deployables. The first two are not that big of a deal. You've got the mobile micro jump unit, so you can put down something that will launch you 100 kilometers in a direction. It's very low EHP. It takes a little bit to activate. This isn't something that'll be good for getting you away from a suicide gank. I could see using one in a mission space to move around, maybe, or using a couple in a mission space to move around.
Are you aware how broken they are on the sissy?
No, but I mean, let me know about bugs. I guess by broken, do you mean that there are defects with them, or do you mean
currently,
that
if you deploy one, it'll micro jump drive Siege Dreads, Titan, Super Carriers.
Yeah, it's definitely not
that's
limited
not
to
intended.
Subcaps. And it's not intended, that's the thing, it's literally broken. Like, not just like, oh, that's broken.
Yeah.
Not intended, but awesome.
Spoilers, sometimes when things make it to the test server, they don't completely work yet. Film at 11.
So I guess it brings up sort of a point, should it work that way? Because that could be funny.
No.
I think for a week it should. Like, we just get 1 week where it works like that, and then they turn it off. Just let us have some fun.
Yeah, for sure. Like April Fool's Week or something. But yeah, so it's a unit that you can use to move yourself 100 kilometers in a direction. If somebody doesn't take care of it first, you might be able to use it for tactical or terrain advantage. I think you can definitely use it for convenience in some sort of care-bearing situations. You can't use it to get away from a suicide gank or anything like that. You might be able to use it in a fight if you have MJD battleships deployed. You can put one down in your loge. You can come along for the ride, too. The next mobile deployable is a scan inhibitor. How it works is you plunk it down, and you get like a 30-kilometer radius D-scan dead zone. So... anyone from outside scanning in will only be able to see the scanning or probing in will only be able to see the mobile scan inhibitor. So you put your probes over it and it'll light up. It's extremely large, but you won't be able to see what's inside of it. On the other hand, anyone who's inside of it won't be able to see out. You can obviously see the guys right next to you on your overview, but your D-scan and probes will not work. So, I mean, obviously there's a tactical advantage in that you can hide your numbers, you can put a number of these down, and then people won't necessarily know where your fleet is hiding. But you can't put them on a gate, you can't put them on a station, you can't put them on a wormhole. And there's a little bit of risk involved in going inside of one. There's still kind of an issue... and, you know, correct me if I'm wrong about this, but with wormhole space where you know, you could use them for maybe a little bit of extra safety and farming, where you see a wormhole activation, or you see a new wormhole come into your system because of the instant reacting scanning system, and then you can clear out of your sight before anyone can scout you and send their fleet in. So that's an issue.
No, I don't really see that being used that much. If you see a new wormhole pop up on scan, you control it, you don't hide it. You just crit it or fucking collapse it.
Sure.
I think it would be... That tactic might be made used by, like, smaller groups which can't really collapse reliably. You could anchor that while you're collapsing, or if you just don't have the people to collapse in general, and then when someone pops in, they won't be able to immediately de-scan your sight runners, but you won't be able to notice them either, so I don't know how valuable that actually is.
Well, and it's not like fucking case space where you can just hop in and start de-scanning somebody down. Like, half the time they're going to be in a SIG, which means you have to probe it down, so the period of time it reliably takes to actually snag somebody in W space is much higher than K space when it comes to ratters, I think, anyways. Not substantially higher, but, like, somewhat higher.
I think probably the most use this is going to see is, like, on staging bosses. To conceal your numbers in some way and force people to actually put a scout on Grid Cloak to provide eyes and manually take down. Like, because they're not going to be able to do Raynor scans unless they're actually there. I presume you can still de-scan whatever is inside the bubble if you're inside it.
Your de-scan just doesn't work, so you have to manually write that down.
Alright, so that's sort of cool, I guess. Add a little bit more of an unknown quantity type thing to nullsec fights, which, as we were talking about with kill boards, perfect information sometimes leads to not fighting, and not fighting is bad.
Yep. So that's that module, and then saving most controversial for last. Well, this is second to last. There are some more siphons coming out. We've talked about siphons before. I still wish they were designed slightly differently, but now there's a siphon that you can put out that will favor processed materials over raw materials.
So now there's more siphons that are not designed properly.
Yeah, but at least they spread the pain around. Most notably, they spread the pain to wormhole space. You can now siphon somebody's polymer reactions. So that's awesome. The controversial one is what is called the Encounter Surveillance System. The Encounter Surveillance System is a deployable you put in a system, and what it does is it makes you more money. As a ratter, you put one down, you rat, some of your bounties go into the Encounter Surveillance System. If it stays undisturbed for long enough, those bounties will even increase a little bit, so you can get more bounty than you would normally. And you, when you're done ratting, you warp over it. You warp over to it. You open it up and you click a share all button that gives bounties back to the people who ratted for them. So everyone who deserves their share gets their share. Everyone makes a little bit more money ratting. That's all well and good. As a pirate, hang on, I'm not done.
All right.
As a pirate, you see an encounter surveillance system. You can warp in, open it up, and take all of the bounty that it has stored up, and it has been siphoning this from the bounties that the ratter should have been getting, and you can take it and print it in what are called ISK tags, which is just basically an object you can exchange to an NPC for cash money. So you can take all of the bounty for yourself and then run away with it. There's a bubble around it. There's an announcement when you get close to it. So it's not like you can really sneak up and do this. People will find out that you're there. If you have the encounter surveillance system up, you receive 80% of the bounties you normally would. 20% go in to the ESS, extra 5% if you leave it up long enough. If you don't have an ESS down, and this is one of the things that's been causing the controversy, you will only receive 95% of the bounties you do today. Bounties are going down by 5% without one of these things. So if you want to get that money back, you have to put one down. You have to risk some of your income and risk someone coming in and taking it out. Now, people are mad. I like the idea.
I hate that you like this idea.
I know. I'm sorry.
You were failing at representing your constituency. So you said Representative Ali Ross.
I don't know if you've seen my blog, but I posted like all
I'm
the common issues.
I'm looking at it. I'm going to let
and...
you do as soon as you're done.
All right. Well, the issues with it that are... I'll recap it for everyone who doesn't want to go look up my Tumblr while listening to this show. The issues that have come, that have been posted on the feedback thread that I've sort of collected, that I've passed on to CCP, because PvE ships are optimized for PvP and not PvP, it'll be hard to defend the ESS if someone comes to attack it and steal your stuff. It takes you a minute to steal tags out of the ESS. That's enough time for a ratter to warp over. It's not enough time for a ratter to go off and reship.
A ratter to warp over and die.
Yeah, that's the thing that's not going to be happening.
It depends on it depends on the ratters. It depends on, I mean, the
no,
big thing.
Very few ratters are even going to use this. 99. So the opening premise of your intro to this module, it's going to make you more money. No, it really
99% of ratters are going to take the 5% hit to bounties.
Sure.
Or just go back to high sec where they don't have to deal with that.
I have a much bigger concern. And it,
I
it more.
Okay.
We're all ready to rip Allie's head
off. Let me rip my head off for you, and then you can keep doing it.
There you go. Anytime we'll have one of those, like, deli ticket things.
So, because PvE ships are PvE ships, they're not going to be good at defending this thing if you wanted to defend it. The big thing, the risk-reward balance is off. You give up an additional 15% of ratting income for a guaranteed 5% more than you would make otherwise. You can earn an extra 5%, but people aren't really thinking about that because there's no real guarantee that that'll happen. Even if you upgrade it, even if it upgrades itself all the way, so you've left it up, you've been undisturbed and ratting for, like, I think Sonic Lover said, like, an hour.
I thought it was considerably more than 1 hour. To get the full upgrade.
Okay. Well, so you've been ratting for a while.
Like 6 hours.
Sure. The risk, even at maximum upgrade, you're risking 15.8% of your bounties to gain a maximum of 10.5% reward. That's worse than the Jita Istublers are offering you. That needs to come up. There needs to be some other reason to use this, because yeah, you're right. As it stated, not a lot of people are going to use it. I think if there was much better reward than, you know, oh hey look, 5%, it would be more likely. It's also, I guess sort of lastly, it's null sec only. It doesn't affect high sec or low sec. So a lot of people are like, well, how come this is just a null sec thing? Why are you nerfing null sec again? Can't we use one of these in high sec? I can see how it'd be a great content generator in high sec. And you're totally right. It's kind of a shame that it's just null sec only. Right now. Now that I have mentioned that, particularly the risk reward balancing thing, please take your tickets, line up, etc., etc., etc.
Okay, so I have concern, and it's not so much over these models. Not like the first deployable modules kind of seem cool, and these ones kind of seem sort of wild. My issue really streams from that these seem like cop-outs. It seems like CCP is not going to deliver what they originally promised when Soundwave talked about, like, modulo passes. Or you even go a step further and say, you know, EVE is out of date. It needs to be recoded and multi-thread fucking things. That would fix a lot of the problems that are in EVE. It feels like these are little things that they're doing and not actually addressing the big issues that they said they would.
Modular pass isn't happening. We've known that since CSM7 Winter Summit. Modular pass is not happening.
Totally my point, though. This is a complete waste of time that could be put towards a better goal.
In other words, it's a little thing that doesn't count for anything, really.
You've seen several articles in EVE News about how we're losing subscriptions. You know, that's time to start looking at, like, why are we losing these? You know, little things, like, the ship rebalances, that's cool, but, like, you have to bring something big to the game that, you know, keeps people interested or will draw
players. This is a point release. So this is, all of this code that's been written has mostly been written over winter vacation between the release of Rubicon and now.
I sort of know what he's saying, though. Like,
I know what he's saying. I'm just making it clear, like, the extent to which this particular release is not the release to go, oh, you know, why haven't you fixed Sob? Why haven't you fixed Pause?
I think what Star Conqueror is trying to say, and he can correct me if I'm putting words in his mouth, but that it's symptomatic of the wrong direction to be going.
Yep. Yeah.
See, it's just a point. I get what he's saying too. Like, it's just a point release, but, like, at some point they decided that they were going to do 12 of these, and, like, this is what's been occurring. And yeah, it's just a point release, but it's still time, and these little blocks of point release time, they add up. And if you had a bigger, grander goal, like, you'd be using these blocks of times for something else.
And instead of having farms and fields, we've got these siphons, which, as Ali noted, are not optimally designed, and then we've got the ESS, which has loads of problems. And there, you can see, like, in them, what a lot of players have been talking about, you know, what we would want out of something like Farms and Fields, but they don't do it, and what they do deliver, they don't really deliver very well.
Yeah, my point being is that CSM is supposed to represent the players, not like the cool things that CCP is doing little here and there.
Sure.
You should be forcing, you know, like, and obviously I do understand that you can't force CCP to do anything, you can only encourage, but, you know, it's like the players, I'm just going to use the pause thing again, but there are other examples of, you almost unanimously said, this is really broken, we'd like it fixed, you know? So it's very frustrating. It's like, you know, to get these little things that, you know, like, we can't even agree if this is useful in this channel. So it's like, it's very frustrating, you know, like, to have little things like this instead of, like, yeah, eventually we would like to do this, instead of, no, as you said, that we're not getting that at all.
I can sort of sympathize with Ali's position here, because having been on the CSM myself, I know very well that you don't always have the optimum opportunity to influence the direction of things like you think you do. Sometimes CCP just comes with you and it's like, hey, we're doing this. And then you gotta go, well, okay, it's not really in a state that players are going to like. You should probably fix this, this, and this, and this, and this. The ability to say you're really going the complete wrong direction with this thing, you really need to be focusing on something else entirely. Like, in all of CSM7, we got one opportunity to do that. And that was with the development paper that we put out, the development white paper. And even that paper was not enough to convince CCP to pick modular POS back up, because they had looked into it and made the executive decision that it was just too much resources for what they were going to get out of it, and there was no discussion to be had. It was not going to happen. So we got other things out of it instead. But, like, even that rare opportunity where we got the ability to say, this is the you know, we're going at this completely wrong, guys. Really need to be thinking about the problem in this high level way, and then take from that direction and put the work in to do something truly transformative for the game that addresses these particular groups and addresses these particular underlying problems and provides this compelling development vision that you can pitch to the existing and future players. And even that wasn't 100% success. So I do really sympathize with Ali's position.
Yeah, and I do as well. I do understand that. But I always think it is important to ask those really hard questions of why isn't this happening? And, you know, what can be said, you know, so about why they aren't being done.
And that said, some development on the deployable structures, like the space yurt, I think people like that.
Space yurt's fantastic.
But they're batting like 1 for 5, 1 for 6. Like
the tractor unit's also pretty good. These
not a good ratio
by a lot of people. All of these things are, I mean, the thing that I find interesting and compelling about the mobile structures is that in many cases they are doing a lot of the things that an individual would want out of a POS. You can refit your ship in space. You can't put a stick up, but you can refit your ship. You can keep your stuff in it. You can start affecting this one part of the game yourself in a way that is incredibly easy to do. This is not about the ESS, because it's the ESS and Siphons are both focused around, I mean, the idea of the farms and fields thing, although Alex is correct in pointing out that they are in many ways fall short of that. I think the ESS, when tweaked, begins to offer a compelling vision for that.
I think I would describe it as much more than a tweak needed for the ESS to approach that.
And are we even going to get that tweak? Because, like, Siphons needed a tweak, and we probably aren't going to see that for a while.
CCP has been talking to us about the ESS. That's been nice.
Well, there's other examples as well. And I talk to James, and especially Shitsa, almost daily, and I'm sure he's just tired of talking to me, but I constantly complain and tell him that he's failed as a CSM representative, as a wormhole CSM representative, as long as we don't have alliance bookmarks for wormhole space. And that is something I think every alliance in W space can agree on, that they want wormhole bookmarks. And it's just, it seems so simple, and yet we don't have it.
Hell, alliances in K space could get behind that. I mean, it's really a pain in the ass whenever we have to, like, when our K-Space Alliance has to go to wormhole space, or when we have to make tactical bookmarks around a gate or something, we have to go there, and then, like, okay, I've got it. Now, which one of you is bookmarking it for NAR Academy? Okay, one of you is doing it for this corp, and then which one of you is doing it for that corp, and then this corp, and then this corp? Like, we only have 3 corps in our alliance, and it's already a pain in the ass. I can't even imagine.
We only had 3 corps in Volta. It was us, Snails, and Verge. It was us. Yeah, it was us, Volta, and Snails, and it was like one of the biggest points of friction between just 3 corporations of like who's got the bookmarks. You know, why aren't they in the folder so everybody else can have them? Having to scan shit 2x, 3x, like it was just a nightmare.
A nightmare.
And it could have been so easily avoided, and all that friction could have been just completely removed from the situation by something as simple as alliance bookmarks.
Yeah, and my point isn't so much that... Go ahead, sorry.
Well, taking that particular example, I would say that Corp Bookmark came out. It was a very successful feature that was incredible quality of life improvement for not just players, but also instigators and managers, like people that are at the leadership level of these groups.
Sure.
And rather than building on that and go, okay, let's do the same thing for alliances, like players had been asking for pretty much since the bookmarks, the Corp Bookmark feature came out, they're going in this other direction instead with arguably, since we're arguing about it, much less value. Certainly less consensus about the value. I think there are other features like that as well. And I still want to talk about the ESS in particular, but I sure. do sympathize with Star Conqueror's point of view that this is... It's frustrating that there's this roadmap that has been created, and the process of actually having the roadmap established, even though CCP talked about that they had a roadmap for years, as we found out in CSM7, they did not. In fact, the roadmap did not exist.
Right.
And it finally does exist. CSM8 is the ones that are looking at it. They say that it's good, but I think a lot of the issue is, aside from some of the groundwork features in Odyssey, like the visual overlay for exploration, which I think has been fantastic, there's not a lot of landmarks to point to that say, okay, this is moving us toward this future direction. Because frankly, with things like the Siphon and things like the ESS, where they're sort of mimicking at what Farms and Fields should be, but missing the mark quite horribly, then you have to think about, okay, well, when the eventual 00 revamp does come, and I have to believe in my heart that it's going to come eventually because we really need it, then there's all these other moving parts that they're adding in that also have to get thought about now instead of just tackling the problem while it's already not simple. Now we're adding more stuff onto it to try to patchwork something that needs to be revamped anyway. And I wasn't really thinking about it till he brought it up, but I do see how that's an issue.
Yeah, and it's something where I can, you know, we could push, like, you could say, all right, let's fix court bookmarks, let's fix everything else, and then there have been no new features for a while, suddenly everyone wants new features. It's kind of this catch-22 of stuff where people want, you know, you look at Twitter, whatever, you say, oh, people want something large, you know, Rubicon is a disappointment for iterating on things that are already there and introducing these, you know, mobile deployables, you know, that don't have much going on, whatever, and then if CCP tries to introduce more things, well, why haven't you gone back and done old things? And I can only imagine that if they were doing that, then, well, why aren't you, why aren't you releasing new things? There's a frustrating thing where I don't know that there is a optimal, satisfying solution. I had something else that I was going to say. We've started talking about the summer expansion, and I'm optimistic about that, in terms of making people happy, in a way that Rubicon perhaps didn't. But everyone has a feature that is the most important feature to them. That is, and this is, I think, one of sort of the crucial difficulties of the CSM. Everyone has a feature that is the most important feature to them. And it would take 3 CCPs, like 3 years, to get all of them done.
Yeah, but I would counter with, whose, like, number one most important feature was the ESS, or was the micro jump drive array? Which group is that speaking to? They're interesting, and they're novel, but compared to, say, Alliance bookmarks, which are the number one feature for an entire group, which is the Wormhole guys, and would be extremely useful for case-based people as well, both in high-sec, not as much in high-sec, I guess, but certainly low-sec and 00, definitely. And that's not getting the attention. And sure. That's not the only... I mean, I don't know if I want to drop this because it's sort of off-topic, but, like, logos on ships is another one where the technical abilities for that now actually exist. And yeah, I don't know if you've read CSM minutes that they've existed for two CSMs in a row, and the hang-up is CCP's, what will be CCP's policy on how to implement this, if to implement it at all?
I mean, in CSM 8 minutes, Siegel said that she didn't want to implement them for, I think, look and feel reasons, and that's something that, you know, CSM 8 is coming back on and is coming back to, because especially when you're looking at, like, Alliance logos and Corp logos on ships, you're looking at the ability to own something and make that a, you know, be a person who owns a piece of Eve, a piece of space, all that, and I can't imagine any reason why CCP wouldn't want to do that other than, I mean, sure, you can say some Alliance logos are perhaps vulgar or offensive, but...
Are they, though? I would look at pizza. Specifically which ones.
Pizza.
It got approved already.
It did, but perhaps shouldn't have. But, yeah, having Alliance, you know, that's something that we're going to come back on, because it would be just such an incredible thing for the game and for the people in it. I mean, I can't...
I know that you can't, because I know exactly what you're talking about, and I've dealt with it myself. But, you know, at the same time, now that I am a player, like, it's sort of important to be talking about, and sure. You know, I'm not saying that, like, the micro jump drive array is going to be a bad thing. I'm sure that we're going to have quite a few fun uses for it, but to have a focus on that instead of these other things, and I know they're not completely mutually exclusive, but I also know that it requires focus, like anything. You have people thinking about and designing things like the ESS when they could be doing other stuff, like quite a few things that I know could have been in Odyssey and would have made that an even more transformative expansion, but did not get in because of other priorities that perhaps, in my opinion, were not nearly as valuable either to the players or to the business. But that wasn't my decision to make.
This burn farms and field kind of thing that seems to be growing in popularity really comes down to how broken Sov is. There is no middle ground. It's big fights or nothing. There is nothing a small Roman game or middle size can do. Which is kind of weird, because CCP did a masterful job with faction warfare. There is small gang and middle gang, and you have to live in the space to actually hold it. Otherwise, someone that wants to live there will take it from you. And not to say that that model can be applied perfectly to Sov, but that type of mechanics should be applied to Sov in some fashion, because there is no middle ground. And that, you know, there's no new players in Sov because of that. It's one side or the other at this point. And you have to pick a side if you really want to take Sov. And it should be more than just timers and super blobs. Like, that is cool and it brings a lot of players to the game, but, you know, maybe CCP should be thinking about how to take a really successful model like Faction Warfare, which they've said every time is super successful, and it is, and applying that kind of model to Sov and getting, you know, that middle ground that I'm sure a lot of people, and I mean a lot of people, even on the current Sov side, would really enjoy.
Yeah. I mean, needs to be more, because the changes from Rubicon, the warp speed changes, I don't care what the numbers say about Rubicon or what other features were in it, that was a long-standing change that needed to be made, and I think that opens up the door to a lot of small gang PvP stuff. The next step is giving, you know, a reason for that small gang PvP stuff to exist other than its own intrinsic value. And I think if you do that, you really unlock the potential there.
Right, say if there were some sort of module in space that you could disrupt other people's ratting activities with. I mean, that's the point.
Yes.
Yeah, no, I mean, I agree that it it needs design work.
Let's bring
work.
That back in. Let's talk about how fucking ineffective this ESS is going to be at doing that. Because it's almost insultingly bad, frankly. As an alliance that does disrupting people's zero-zero income professionally, that's... We don't live in wormhole space. We don't do faction warfare. We do that. And this ESS is complete crap for that. It's just, it's not addressing that at all. I can see how you'd think it would be, maybe.
I mean, if anyone, if there was an incentive to use it, which is to say if the rewards for using it were higher, and if there was, especially if it took longer to access such that there was any sort of conflict available over that access thing, because right now the timing is too quick to allow a PvE group to reship, should they choose to contest it. And I have met plenty of PvE groups that have undocked and attempted to blob my stupid roam out.
But how does that have a big picture on Sov, though? It doesn't.
It doesn't, but it's a, I mean, it's a small gang thing. It's a thing where it's affecting the daily lives of the people who are living in and who are using the Sov. It's a thing that you can attack to hurt someone else's income generation capabilities, either because you're stealing from them or because in a world where, like I say, this is more attractive to use, and I recognize that we're not in that world, and that's something that I'm actively working on, in a world where that's true, the ESS becomes a way to at least affect that in some manner, other than just leaving some guy AFK in the system in a cloaky ship.
Right, so first of all, we've nerfed 0-0 income via ratting 5% across the board, which I think is a big middle finger to individual 0-0 grunt level pilots. That did not need to be done at all. The gain, as you noted, you're sacrificing... Well, factoring in the 5% nerf, you're factoring in an additional 15% nerf to your current income, making a total of 20% nerf to your current income, so that you maybe get 5% more, and maybe, if this thing is not disturbed for hours and hours and hours on end, you would get 10% more than you would currently get right now. As you noted, that's not nearly enough. Oh, by the way, this theoretical 10% more... you would have to make sure that your own alliance people are not just taking it for themselves.
If your own alliance people are taking it for themselves, you can become aware of that because it'll tell you, and then you can kick them from your alliance the same way you would do if they took any of your alliance's other stuff.
In what manner does it tell you? Because as far as I know, it just tells you that someone's there.
It tells you who's there. It tells you who's there. So if you're in the system and someone comes up and steals all the stuff from you, and I think it makes sense and on a similar lines to turning off the light when you log off. If you're the last person in the system, loot the thing, share it, or if you're the second last person,
or just take it because there's no one else in the system to know that you took it. Or you can just blame it on somebody else, like, oh, I was gonna take it, but then a ratting group came in and they took it too. Sorry, guys.
I want to go back on something else. Like, you get blobbed by, some person on your roaming gang, but you could do the opposite as well. People just choose not to fight, because, and I know I'm backtracking a little bit here, but I don't want to get too far away from before making a point, but the fact that people can choose just not to fight at all, and this is a problem I have sometimes in roaming with courtmates, is people, if you have a reputation for winning, they won't fight you at all, regardless of what you're blowing up or what you're stealing. There's no reason for you to. And the ESS won't change that if you have a reputation for winning. There is no reason to fight you, and they won't.
Well, I think it's deeper than that.
Oh, yeah.
So I think we're going into why the owners of the space aren't going to use it, because they're not going to see... The overwhelming majority of cases, they're not going to see the theoretical extra income that's coming off of this thing. Maybe in some systems which are extremely popular, well-defended, perhaps. But I think you're already, you've got Mina pointing out quite noticeably no one's going to take that risk, because it's a really big risk to take with not a lot of payoff, and that payoff is far from guaranteed. Now, on the offensive side... why I would not use it. say I throw this thing down, and like you said, I'm trying to use it to disrupt ratter income. That's the phrase you use on your blog post.
Sure.
It's a global beacon, which means as soon as it's down, anyone can warp to it. It is not disrupting ratter income in any way, because if I'm not there, they'll just blow it up. And if I am there, they're not going to rat. And if they come to blow it up with something, it's either going to be more than I can take, because otherwise why would they go there, or they're not going to fight, like Star Conqueror is saying, in which case it doesn't affect the ratter income.
Yeah, and the person...
That's fair.
The person that's not fighting is going to lose these things to whoever wants to fight, because they're annoyed that they aren't getting a fight, they'll just blow them up, and then, you know, you're back to square one.
So I've got this thing, which costs like 30-something mil. I throw it out there. As long as I'm in the system, no one's going to be ratting, because I would have just blown them up already, or there's some reason I can't fight them, in which case they can just attack the thing that I just put down. They can do it with an interceptor with fighters assigned. They can do it with sniper ships. They can do it with that big old blob like you were talking about that I can't drop on, and they'll just take it out, or they will not undock at all. And as soon as I leave, I don't get the notification that someone's there. Therefore, I'm not able to defend it or interact with it in any way. And they can just take it out and go back to ratting. So it is not a tool for pirates at all. And the tone of the post that put it out was frankly really insulting to our intelligence as griefers. Seriously. Like, what a slap in the face. Here's this great tool for you that doesn't do anything you would ever need it to do, ever.
I mean,
we're putting it out for you. Aren't you grateful for having it?
I think the tool for griefers or whatever is predicated on people using it. And I think that's the real catch, you know, is people not using it. In terms of people being afraid of someone else stealing their income, you know, if you're, in that case, if you just, you know, go share out when you log off, you will, you know, sure, the thing won't necessarily upgrade itself a ton, but you'll get your income back.
Well, that's the thing, is, like, you keep predicating this on, like, some magical world where people are going to use this, but nobody's going to use this because the stats aren't in line, and we have no reason to believe that we're on a path in any sort of direction to getting those stats aligned based on previous
releases, and I think Turtle says that because the whole thing is predicated on the stats being fucked up from the tone of the thing. Like, nerfing 0-0 ratting income seems to be the entire reason that CCP thinks people are going to use that, because they need to get that back, in other words.
And, I mean, the whole reason I'm talking about a world where the stats are aligned is because that's, you know, obviously on it, like, I agree with you. If the stats aren't there, then it's a bad thing, and it, no one will use it, and it will just be one of those things in the market that someone looks at and they go, what the hell is that? But as a CSM, I can't just say, oh, well, it's bad now, so there's no way to make it better. If you make it better by tweaking the rewards, which is a very easy thing to tweak from a CCP perspective, so I look at that and I say, that's a very realistic thing to ask for. And there's a really good reason to ask for it, namely, unless you do this, it won't meet your goals. The siphon arguably meets their goals without being better designed. It just frustrates this other class of people. The ability to disrupt moon income at a lower investment point than actually taking out the tower. Tower reinforces are hard, and if you're fighting against someone who's got more firepower than you, they're potentially impossible. You certainly won't be able to finish off the tower when you're done. And siphons do that. I mean, one, I have beef with them for how they do it. I have beef with them for the side effects they have when they do it. But if I wanted to grief my opponent by blanketing their region with siphons, I could do that. And it would cost me some money for some frustration if I wanted to make money off of them.
But
you can manage that with warp-ins and stuff, but
not according to my kill board, you can't.
You use the word grief when in reality a much more effective way to grief and more rewarding in my opinion is to suicide gank your opponent in high sec. They won't see it coming, it's a larger loss, and it's much more frustrating. That
and it's
is,
a
I
completely
think, a
different
definition of grief.
That's sort of out of scope, Star. That like, requires coordination with multiple players, and this is something an individual could do.
Well, you
my,
say that.
My beef with them is this. The 10% waste thing, so that you don't have to actually touch the siphon once you put it down to hurt your opponent, which is not how it should be. And the other one is, you have to deploy it in such a way that your ship is almost certainly to get tackled, which we have a moderate mining boss, nothing great, but there's dead stuff on it when people try to put siphons down. Either the ship blows up before it puts the siphon down, after it puts the siphon down, or when it tries to touch the siphon, because you have to interact with this structure before the POS locks you, which, I mean, in practice does not happen frequently enough. So unless you're using some kind of decoy or you have a large enough fleet to tank the POS anyway, there is that problem. And if you have a large enough POS fleet to tank the POS anyway, you could just take out the POS, probably. So that was my thing with it. But yeah. The ESS, I think, is much more poorly designed than even the siphons.
I mean, so here's the thing. Let me just ask you this. If the incentives got fixed, which, like I say, is, I think, a reasonable thing to ask for, if the incentives got fixed, so someone might consider putting one down, is it still as terrible?
If it was tweaked and such tweaked, if it was massively buffed and the nerf to ratting income removed in such a way that people would voluntarily deploy them on themselves, then, you know, going to them and trying to take stuff out of them might be viable. But I still don't, from the way it's initially pitched, I have no faith or confidence that would actually occur, if that makes any sense. Like, you'd have to move the ratting income back to 100%. When you drop this thing down, it'd have to be something like you're sacrificing 10% to gain 15% or something like that. Like, it'd have to actually be a meaningful pitch. And the other end of that is, if you want it to be something that pirates deploy offensively, you got to remove the global beacon unless someone is actually at it. And the whole... And then this is the other thing. Why the fuck are there four racial variants of it that do exactly the same thing, but just give you a different kind of tag?
What the fuck?
In what way is that accessible to players at all? Well, there are four kinds of them, but that doesn't really matter. And then instead of giving you the ISK, they give you these tags, and then depending which variant is here, then you have to take the tags to a different spot. Why do I have to do that? No reason. It doesn't really matter. You just take them to the different place, and they'll give you the amount of ISK that you would have had otherwise if it just gave you ISK, like it does when you pay everybody else out.
I think it's a way, I kind of like that though, because it's a way to actually turn that ISK into something physical. So, yeah, maybe it would take you a minute to reship, but if you could get like an alt and a saber and drop a bubble and just keep that dude there for a minute and blow him up, like, you could recover some of that. Like, it's a way of just making that ISK physical.
Well, okay, then why the four racial variants of it?
Well, no, that's kind of dumb. I mean, unless it's at the complete opposite corner of the universe and it's easier to use one racial because it's a closer turn-in point, but like, even then, that is stupid. Like, just rework that completely. But I like the idea of making that ISK something physical, an item, rather than just having it get dumped into somebody's wallet and goodbye, you know, gone
into the
ether.
I'm fine with it being item two. I'm not fine with it being four different items that do exactly the same thing. It just adds extra steps and confusion for players.
I hear you, bro. You mad. I hear you.
And the beacon thing is like, ugh. Like, it should be more like some of the other deployable structures where you can scan it down, or maybe it's on your exploration thing if you look at it, you know, carefully. You actually have to find it in space, but just having it pop up on your overview, it's pretty much a come kill me sign. And means that anyone that doesn't want it in their system doesn't have to have it in their system, or doesn't have to rat while it's in their system and someone else is in the system. As soon as that someone else leaves, they'll go kill it. If that someone else stays, they can just stay docked like they're already doing, or massively blob up like they're already doing. So right now, no one will want to use it on themselves because the stats suck. And no one will use it on someone else because it doesn't disrupt their ratting at all. And that's where we're at with the ESS. And Turtle's poking me for time. So yes, let's move on to the other thing, which in my opinion is a little bit related to what Star Conquer brought up initially, which is, and for everyone listening, yes, this is our last segment. Sorry about all this, but it's a really good discussion to have. CSM Vice Chair Rip Artag put out a post. Ali, would you like to give a little context?
I mean, what kind of context are you looking for? Just like a summary of the post, or?
Well, I could summarize the post. He basically, this is the vice chairman of the CSM, put out a post called Another Way of Saying Never, where he looks at the average logged in user count after Retribution, Odyssey, and Rubicon. And it's not very hope filled, to say the least. In fact, I read it as a pretty scathing indictment of not EVE development in general, but just what EVE has become and what we could possibly hope for it to develop into. And it kind of hit home for me in a bit of a way. Like, I forget the exact quote, but he said that EVE is way more fun to read about than it is to play. And yeah, kind of.
I enjoy watching the streams of these big super fights and whatnot more than I would enjoy fighting them.
Yeah, nobody has fun in Zaydai. Like,
yeah. I mean, I know CCP's reconstituted Team Gridlock. So
they disbanded Team Gridlock.
Team Gridlock has been alive and dead many, many times. It's but
Team Gridlock all the time.
Well, it was my understanding that they were, like, really one of the special teams that really only convened when there was, like, an issue, a gridlock issue going on. And we haven't had one of those in a little bit, or at least anything that they can feasibly fix.
Right, and that is, no, there is stuff that they can feasibly fix, or there is stuff that they're working on in terms of server performance right now.
That's cool, but the article goes a lot deeper than just, like, tie-dye and server performance. I mean, it hit home a little bit for me too, because you really have like two kinds of people when it comes to EVE. It's like the people that are like hardcore about it and want to play, and the people that don't, and you either play it or you don't. Like, there's not a lot of middle ground. He talks about people resubbing and stuff, but
so to like, give people that, we're going to link this in the show notes, but without you having to, like, tab out of listening to the cast. So there's a massive spike after Retribution. And, like, halfway point between Retribution and Odyssey, it begins the dip. Then after Odyssey, there's a massive spike.
I wouldn't say
not
massive.
Not as big as Retribution.
Honestly, after Odyssey dropped, it plateaued and then just started to drop again.
Yeah, like, it dropped pretty harshly before Rubicon, yeah. And then it spiked up again, not as high as Odyssey, which was not as high as Retribution. And now it looks like it's going to follow the same path out of Odyssey and Retribution and dip down further below what it had spiked before. Or what it had started at before, I should say. So, Ripard writes, CCP Seagull, or excuse me, EVE's problem is that most people who try EVE and play EVE eventually decide they don't like EVE. As a result, CCP is getting further and further locked into a marketing strategy of selling the game to the same block of customers that have given them money to them at some point in the past. Meanwhile, the customers themselves are getting locked into a strategy where they try the new expansion. If it appeals to them, they get bored with it, they unsubscribe, and play other games for a while. The new expansion comes along that piques their interest, they subscribe again to try it out, they get bored with that, and the cycle repeats. CCP Seagull is trying desperately to break out of the cycle with a big swing for the fences play, but I'm no longer convinced it's going to work. Matter of fact, I'm becoming increasingly convinced it's not going to work. And that's what it is. Now, obviously, this big swing for the fences play, I assume, is NDA'd.
Yeah, I mean, we know not NDA'd that, you know, I assume, actually, what Rupert's referring to isn't NDA'd, and it's this whole, eventually we'll build Stargates to new space, thing. That there will be player-built Stargates, and that there will be something beyond those Stargates. And that's something CCP has said, and CCP has repeated a number of times. Context for this is some sort of looks at some graphs. Nosy Gamer also wrote some really excellent articles about the graphs, in which he points out that the subscription data is... the subscriptions are continuing to grow somewhat, but people are spending slightly less time... individual accounts are spending slightly less time logged in.
Alts, which is, like, basically alts.
Yeah, alts or something else going on. Some of it is bots. I'll link this to you so you can link it I will link this to you so that I can so that you can have that too. But it's an interesting analysis of kind of different factors that go into what describes the number of people online. So some of Rupert's premise is a little bit shaky in that area. But I think the thing that he does have a point on, and this did kind of hit home, is yeah, a lot of people try Eve, play Eve, and eventually decide they don't like Eve. CCP knows that. One of the sessions that we had, and things that just kept coming up over the summit, and it ended up being a session all of its own, sort of unexpectedly, was this whole player retention idea. CCP's gone out and they've got data on what makes players join up and quit and that kind of stuff. I would hope that they're aware that obviously they can't just get the same amount of money. They can't just get more money from the same number of customers. Eventually the same number of customers run out of money or want to go somewhere else. This is the peak number of people logged on. And certainly the pattern of people unsubscribing or coming back to and then coming back is something that you can see in the graph. I don't think that pattern will ever go away entirely.
I don't think it's necessarily unhealthy either. But
sure.
It's pretty natural. Like, if you've played something you liked, maybe it loses your interest, and then it adds something new, and you want to go back and try that new thing, and that loses interest eventually. Sure, that doesn't sound that weird to me. I think the problem that Ripper points out is that it's so obviously cyclical, like this is happening over and over and over again, and as it's going, the new stuff coming out is holding the interest of people, either not as many people or not as long. And if you combine it with the Nosy Gamer stuff, probably not as long, I would say. So whatever new novelty stuff is coming out, people are trying it, and then going away at a faster rate.
Well, that's you just used the word novelty, and that's the thing, is Retribution wasn't novelty. Retribution had game-changing overhauls to, like, massive parts of the game. And that's what got people excited. It wasn't, like, fluff deployable features. Like, look at the stats for Odyssey, and look at the peak concurrent user non-existent spike.
The big thing Retribution had was it had the T1 Cruiser revamp, which was huge in terms of the accessibility of fleets and action and stuff you can do. That tier aside ship rebalancing has continued, but and certainly the Interceptor rebalance has been wildly popular, but none of the things that are rebalanced, while things that are still coming up to be rebalanced, are also important ships. I wouldn't ask, Fozzie and Ryze to stop paying attention to, say, recons, because I don't know, because something else. They're both designers, they're not coders, they're not the kind of people who would be able to fix POS. Rebalancing and having a working set of recons won't give you the same kind of ROI that you have from the cruiser rebalance. I think that was one of the things that was that drove a lot of the success of Retribution.
Yeah, but recons aren't really all that broken. I mean, you can talk about Falcon, but Falcon's Falcon. But okay, it's overhauling the T1 cruisers that fits right into what I said. It was a massive game-changing thing. It changed roles for a lot of ships and changed gameplay for a lot of people. Like, that's the kind of stuff that gets people excited. It's not these little things that feel like CCP looked at the little things list and then just kind of, smoked a bowl and drifted off on a tangent and just made some shit up.
So from my perspective, I think Retribution, it put out the cruiser rebalance. It also did bounty hunting, which, was surprisingly popular, I think. I don't even think CCP expected it to be as popular a feature as it was. But it undeniably was very popular. What you had with Odyssey, and we knew it even as we were helping CCP put it together, is that it was a lot, very much a springboard expansion, a proof of concept of what expansions could be in the future, taking the best parts of Retribution with also some institutional changes that probably would need to be made for Eve to, like, get to the next step in terms of how they plan things. And, like, the exploration change was its sort of flagship feature. And it's important, and I think it has improved people's experience with the exploration feature in general. But I think the other part of it, which was having something new and awesome to go actually explore and find, was not involved in the expansion. And Allie knows what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
Because she's seen the same things that I saw. And it wasn't actually put in for this expansion either. So you had this springboard with nothing sprung off of it. You had ghost sites, which are a cool design idea. Like, I like them. I like that, failing them has consequence and there's really rich rewards. But they were also extremely rare and still not quite as transformative, I think, as the potential of some of the other things that were talked about for Odyssey or follow-up expansions. And I think you're having sort of the same problem with the warp speed change. They had this warp speed change, which could have been a great springboard, but then they also nerfed the warp speeds down, so it wasn't as impactful as it could have been. And some of that was for necessary server design reasons, and some of it just, cruisers could have been a bit faster than they were. Frigates certainly could have been a lot faster than they currently are. So they're faster than they were, but not as fast as they could have been. And even still, like, the small gang warfare potential of all that isn't unlocked because there's still nothing for people to fly to and do aside from these gigantic lagfest fights. Which, as Star Conquer pointed out, are much, much, much more fun to watch on a stream than to actually fly and try to do. Because when you do, you're reminded of how shitty this game is. because yeah, it takes you a long time to get there, even in a super fast ship. You might die on the way, and once you get there, it takes you forever to do anything, and you could seriously get just blown up before you even really interact with the game in a meaningful way.
That's the ultimate irony about this discussion right now, is that we're worried about increasing peak concurrent users, but the way game mechanics are right now, and just the sheer fact that the game can barely handle, if it can handle, the number of players that want to get together now, like, priorities, bro.
CCP like, seems like, to have this, like, dream of getting more and more people into a single system doing the same fight, when in reality, like, the hardware can only go so far, and it really should be spread out over several systems and be big fights at the same time as small and middle size at the same time.
It's not about how many dudes you can pack into a room, because frankly, CCP is always going to lose the hardware war. Like, unless in somewhere in their software they can create reasons for people to go to different places, split up, and do different things, they are always going to lose the hardware war, because there are more people that want to get into that system than any node in existence can handle and deal with, well, that CCP realistically can acquire.
Yeah, and also, I mean, having a system where the max dudes always wins is a problem. Like, the thing that's come up with the sort of genre balance conversations is, alright, well, if you take away sentry assist, then our 300 carriers won't be able to hold the line against a 1600-man Dami blob. And that's true. I don't think that that makes it a balanced mechanic, but setting it up so that just the person with the largest fleet wins with no regards to tactics or, you know, pilot skills or anything like that, is a poor game design decision. And the other thing is, like, everyone looks at something like flat PCU numbers or, like, you know, Eve is a game more fun to watch them play, and they put their own things to it. Like, Rippard made a post about, well, what if everyone just started with 25 million skill points and then they would like playing the game? And that frustrated me with some other reasons. It's, you know, simplifying the game and taking interesting complexity out won't make it a more fun or compelling game for everyone to play. It would just leave.
In fact, I think it would make it worse. I mean,
yeah, you'd lose the people
who. Very good.
You'd lose the people who you have now, and you wouldn't pick up any more. It's kind of like, I mean, it's kind of like the situation Dust's in. Dust is a game that doesn't have a compelling Eve link, so there's no like reason for Eve players to also play Dust or to get their friends to play Dust or to hire Dust mercs or, you know, pay for services for Dust, because Dust doesn't matter if as an Eve pilot. And it, especially when released, wasn't that great of a shooter, and it's never going to be more than, like, a good or average, you know, sort of average good shooter. It's not like it's going to be the absolute best on the market, so...
Well, FPS is also the most competitive type as well. Like,
CCP
can't compete with people like Bungie, with Destiny, and, you know, PlanetSide. And there's a couple other big giants as well that really can throw some good money, and they have amazing development teams. It's very hard to compete with these people.
Yeah, exactly. So it's, I mean, if you took the unique parts of Eve out, if you took the unique complexity, if you took whatever, you know, is hard about the game out, then you might get you would just be left with spreadsheets in space, but now there's not much depth to it. So that's not the like, absolute be-all and end-all solution to it, either. Everyone sort of looking at this and filtering it through their own preconceptions of what would make the game more fun. Whether that's, you know, making high-sec perfectly safe, removing high-sec from the game entirely, you know, more small gang, more big fights, more server capabilities, I don't know what, and it sort of gets back to the everyone has their own, this is the most important feature, and it's, you know, certainly the CSM can each come with their own most important feature or their own, the most important feature of their people, and then argue and debate that. But at some point, someone will be sad.
My thing with that is, like, yeah, it's everybody's got their most important feature, but what the common thread with all the features that you just touched on, and I mean, there are some features like, oh, let's have alliance level bookmarks. That's like an important feature for a group of people that's actually a doable goal. But most of the ones you're talking about, like make HiSec perfectly safe, which is a terrible idea and would probably be the surest fire way to kill CCP subscriptions within 5 years. Or removing HiSec entirely, which I think would be the surest way to keep CCP's subscriptions perfectly even for in like nearly infinity. Or do the server capability thing where you would have to like literally recode the entire game. Or my personal one is that Eve's actual gameplay is really out of date. Like the spreadsheets in space thing, if you compare that to some other space combat games that are also MMOs, and the way they, just like the actual piloting of your ship and interacting with things around you and shooting at things around you is much more engaging than what Eve has.
Sure.
That would also require a massive revamp of the game. Modular passes would require a massive revamp of that feature. It's getting to the point where CCP is running out of little things that would do anything more than address some pain points for the current community. There is no more little low-hanging fruit that would actually reach out and snag new people, because even the Stargates thing, and Sin, I know you want to talk, maybe you can touch on this as well after you get with your point, but okay, you can build new Stargates to new Red Crosses to shoot, or whatever the fuck. What new engaging gameplay is going to be out there? Or are you still going to click Red Cross on overview or white square on overview if it's another player, click your weapon, and then wait for the bar to go down from gray to red all the way, and then pick up whatever it drops? Sin, take it.
Cool, and I might have a comms dropout, just holler if I'm breaking up, but I should be good. You know, there's a couple things, or there's two different topics. There's the, do they need to redo things to make it interesting, versus what are they doing to try to attract more subscriptions? And it sounds like one would beget the latter, but at the same time, and Alec probably can't talk about this because of the whole CSM NDA thing, but you have to imagine that as a business, CCP has at least some type of benchmarking data. Like, I know when I was unsubbed, when I had my thing in the fall, I was getting mails from CCP that said, hey, we noticed you haven't re-upped either with Plex or credit card, you know, what, can you ask what happened, you know, what's the deal? And they were looking for feedback, almost to the point where it was spam. And they have to have benchmark figures that are statistically significant that say, by group of players, so you put them into different buckets, right? You have one bucket, people that tried it on a, you know, temp subscription and then never bought into it, or people that had played for a long time and were bitter vets and then all of a sudden dropped off the face of the planet, and you put them in different buckets. And they have to have something that says, well, for the new pilots that are starting up, i.e. not an alt, but it's a main, there was too high of a learning curve, and part of that learning curve, as we know, is probably the SP curve. So they do things. Like, you saw the dev blog that was put out today or yesterday, I believe, the talk says, you know, thermodynamics, you don't need power management to 5 anymore. So that'll be a lot less SP that you need before you can start overheating. And that, of course, dovetails into the changes they want to make with heat on the other dev blog. And then, you know, when they released a Gnosis battlecruiser, that's a favorite ship in HiSec for ganker alts that people recycle, because if you look at the requirements to fly that ship, Spaceship Command 1, that's all you need to fly that. And you can mount any weapon system on it, pretty much. So you can get into that very, very quickly. So they try to do things to make it easier for those pilots, but you know, the group that we're sitting here, I'd like to hear everyone else's opinion. Do we think that for new players that enter the game, the cold, harsh reality of the sandbox is too much for most people to handle, and the SP curve is too high, or it's just right, or what do you guys think?
I mean, I think the... I think the sandbox... So I think a big difference between EVE and other sandbox games, especially... I think the big difference between EVE and other sandbox games is that a lot of other sandbox games give you an effort to have something that you want to do. Think about Minecraft. You have monsters, it's gonna get dark. So, it gets dark, you get owned by monsters, you dig a little hole in the ground for yourself, and then you work on expanding that hole and getting new tools to expand that hole better, and soon you're building giant fantasy castles in the sky because you need a hole in the ground because the monsters are going to come and eat you at night. If you look at Don't Starve, it's a survival game. You have to survive. It's a sandbox. But the sort of sandboxy bits, the bits that aren't immediately related to survival, come up. The ramp up and the learning curve is a lot slower in that particular game, partly because there's a lot fewer things. One of the things that the CSM ended up talking about in, one of the things that the CSM ended up talking about at the summit in the summer was talking about the player retention and that kind of data that you're talking about. And we were talking about the idea that there's a huge amount of knowledge that you need to play EVE about EVE. And whether there was a way to, you know, whether that knowledge wall was a big thing in between people becoming really engaged in the game and not. So, you know, if I don't have, and it sort of combines with the idea of a social wall of the lack of friends keeping a lot of people out, because if I don't have friends to ask dumb questions of, I am going to find it harder to get that knowledge. Especially if I'm, you know, continuously alt-tabbing from the game to Google, or maybe I don't even know that, looking things up on the internet is an accepted part of gameplay. There's a lot more information on the game that could be communicated in a better way in the client than it is now. For example, think about what if there was, like, an ISIS, the ship browser, but for industry. So instead of looking at a BPO and having these weird numbers in this weird spreadsheet, you had, all right, here's a ship. It's an Enyo to build this. I need this. And it branches in a tree. And I need this, and I need this, and I need this, and I need this. And then you can use that to open up the market and to look at what your inputs are going to cost you, you know, how that, what kind of profit you're going to be able to make, and... you know, what kind of construction you could do. Like, something like that would do a lot to take the information out of the game and, or out of, off of the internet and into the actual game world.
And but that again, that's another, like, huge thing. Like, doing a rewrite of the industry system is a massive undertaking, just like doing a rewrite of the Corp interface would be.
Sure. I mean, I'm just, like, that was just the first sort of thing that popped off my head.
But you're right, and somebody in the comments of the Jester's Trek blog said, like, hey, EVE has one of the best, most deep crafting-related things, like, an incredible crafting profession with the most, like, player-painful UI that you could possibly imagine for it. But to do a rewrite of that would be massive, just like doing a rewrite of the combat and ship control system would be massive, just like doing a rewrite of the corp interface would be massive, just like doing a rewrite of POSIS would be massive. Like, if you could do the ISIS thing, but to make it anything more than what ISIS is now, which is like a thing to show you what ships are. And by the way, we don't even have ISIS out on the website, which I can't even fathom. I assume that it would be. And maybe that's just because I'm forgetting a session that we had in CSM7, but I didn't really think the ship tree was a great idea to have in the game, but it is a nice idea to have on the website, because like every other MMO where you can take a look at classes and some sample character designs, here's yep. some Eve ships. Look at how pretty they are. Don't you want to play this so you could fly them? Except you can't do that.
Sure.
So, you know, we're not even at the point where the ship tree is on the website. And they can put the ship tree on the website, and people can get excited about the ships. But when they want to go build or fly the ship, they have to run into the industry or combat UI, and then they either like it or they don't. And I think what you're finding is that the majority of people don't like it enough to keep playing for long periods of time, unless they're really hardcore players like us. And even us, when we're asked, hey, what's the shittiest part about Eve? We all have a laundry list of things that we really play the game in spite of because of our social connections or because of the really grand story of the game that we like being a part of. Huh. But I don't love being a part of the game so I can shoot Red Crosses. I created NAR so I never had to do that again. And hell, I even failed at that because I still have to do it occasionally. And even fighting against other players. I mean, it's fun to fight against another FC and maneuver the ship, but compared to other games, and I think, Turtle, you showed me Star Conquer. Or not like the player Star Conquer. I mean, there's a game called Star Conquer.
Oh, yeah. Star Conflict.
Star Conflict, yes, that's right. It's another space shooting thing where you also essentially shoot Red Crosses, but you actually, like, and it's third person, just like Eve is, but you can rotate your ship around and you actually have to move it places and you fire things with the mouse button instead of pressing a module slot.
It's arcadey. It's basically a third person arcadey spaceship game.
Yeah, and it's, I could PvE in that for hours if it had even a fraction of Eve's depth and like overall storyline and ways players could, you know, impact the universe. So Eve has that other part of it, but the actual physical doing of the things that let you impact the universe and interact with these other players, that's the painful part. And I think the only reason that Eve has survived is because the sandbox, player development, player interaction, social, space conquest-y aspect of it is so engaging that people want to be a part of it anyway. But ask the industry people whether they actually physically like putting stuff into build. They probably don't. Right. Ask the market trading people if they actually physically like using the market for trade orders. They probably don't. Probably like the metagame of it, but don't actually like the mechanics of doing it. And I think the same can be said for most things in the game. Except for like people that really enjoy running missions because they don't have to pay attention to it. Or people that really like mining because they can read a book while they do it. Which is okay, that's fair. But how many players are leaving the game because of those design decisions instead of staying and becoming like the 500,001 subscriber, the 500,100th subscriber, so on and so forth, and actually keeping the game up and growing in a massive way so that when CCP does do stuff like a television series, which I really hope they follow through with, and people come in and try the game after hearing about the epic space stories they can become a part of, they don't get turned off by what they have to do to actually do that. And I am reminded by Turtle that this has been going on quite a long time. So, we may have to break this out into two parts. We'll see.
I gotta leave regardless, so peace.
Yeah. Alright, so closing things out, our sponsor, EveBet.com. It's New Eden's premier betting service. You can bet on real-life sports and esports, which I think is a real-life sport, sort of, with ISK. I've got blackjack, slot machines, industry standard odds for sporting events, and they're continually adding the list of sports and esports that they interact with. So give them some money, hopefully you'll get some back. May the odds be ever in your favor. And that is it for episode 66. Go to declarationsofwar.com to participate in the show poll. Leave a comment, put in a donation, grab some swag from the Declarations of War shop at welovefine.com/eve. You can reach Noir via our public channel, Cafe Noir. Apply to join us or Noir Academy in the forums, noirmerks.com. We are having a massive recruitment drive. If you've ever thought about applying to Noir, Noir Academy, or having your corp join Noir Mercenary Group, now is the time. We've just celebrated our 6th anniversary. We've got a lot of activity on the forums. We've got good, strong, high-level and mid-level FCs. We've got a partner corp that's doing really well and helping us out with the European time zone. Noir Academy is, in a lot of ways, better than ever in terms of being able to handle large numbers of students. Seriously, go do it. Just take the plunge. Take your corp out of whatever shitty tie-dye doing 0-0 alliance you're in and go, hey, let's have some real fun PvP. Let's fuck some people up and get paid for it so we don't have to shoot red crosses. Apply. Alright, and that's it. Fly safe, everybody. Good hunting. Get down. Pull me closer if you think you can hang. Hands up, hands tied. Don't go screaming if I blow you with a bang. Zicky, zicky. I'm coming in the Cherokee gasoline. Best game on the window screen. Ticket, ticket. Wheels bouncing like a trampoline. When I get to where I'm going, gonna have you trembling. Last night, young bad girls doing well. Last night, young bad girls doing well. We'll be right back.